What do we find at the intersection of faith and the world? Our new podcast, Crossroads, explores this question in thought-provoking conversations featuring guests from around the world who are seeking to live faithfully in the public square. This is a safe space to discuss politics, technology, and our responsibilities as citizens. Pull up a chair and meet us as we search for a better way forward. Welcome to Crossroads, where we discuss the intersection of sacred and civic. I'm your host, Joe Nygaard Owens. Today on the show, we're excited to have Dr. Robert Wolcott, chair of the World Innovation Network and adjunct professor of innovation at the Booth School of Business at the University of Chicago, and adjunct professor of executive education at the Kellogg School of Business at Northwestern University. Hi, Rob. It's so good to have you here. And tell us where you're joining us from.
Well, great to be back with you, Reverend. I am currently at home in Ridgewood, New Jersey, so just outside New York City. For those of your listeners who live or are from New York, New Jersey is a state immediately to the west. And there are some bridges and tunnels, but you know, you have to go through a visa process to get into New Jersey.
Thank you for clarifying that for us. And please just call me Joe.
Ah, sure.
And joining us again this week is Dr. Sonia Komen, the Cathedral's Director of Digital Engagement and scholar in the area of business, art, and technology. Hi, Sonia. Welcome again. And tell us where you're joining us from.
Hi, Joe. Hi, Rob. It's wonderful to be here with both of you. I am at the Cathedral in Washington, D.C. on this beautiful sunny day.
Fantastic. Well, I am joining you all from Cleveland, Ohio, where it just happens to be sunny today. So it's a great day. Rob and Sonia join us today as we continue the conversation around artificial intelligence and life in the digital realm. Rob, you have a new book coming out next month. Will you tell us a bit about it?
Well, so briefly, Joe, it's called Proximity. And it articulates the direction of change of every industry the rest of our careers. And that sounds like maybe a hyperbolic statement, but when you dig in, you realize it's not hyperbolic at all. What it reflects is a question I posed about 10 years ago, which was, what's fundamentally different about digital or digital technologies? And certainly artificial intelligence fits within that rubric. What's fundamentally different about digital technologies from the industrial age? Because everybody was looking at AI and 3D printing and mobile apps and rooftop solar and all these digitally enabled things. But I was trying to understand what's different from the past in what an economist would call a general purpose tool, which are digital technologies are an example of a general purpose tool. And what we quickly realized was that digital technologies of all sorts allow us to compress capabilities in smaller and smaller packages. And distribute them all over the economy, ever closer to each moment in time and space. And therefore, and this is the punchline, this is proximity, digital pushes the production and provision of value, products, services, experiences, ever closer to the moment of actual demand in time and space. So not just better supply chain management, not having the right thing on the shelf of the store, but literally transforming your business model, your technology platform, everything, in order to encourage us to procrastinate, to wait and do as little value add as possible until there's an actual customer or user ready for whatever it is you've got. That's proximity.
Oh, fascinating. Sonia, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, if we think of proximity in relation to generative AI, for example, this sense of immediacy that Rob was just describing is perhaps at its most spectacular. Like, you have something in mind, right? You draft up a prompt, right? And within seconds, whatever you wanted, like be it a poem, a summary of a book that you don't have time to read, you know, code for a computer program, a soundtrack, like whatever it might be, it's going to be made available to you within seconds. And that's already happening. We all may have already experienced it by using ChatGPT or any other online GAI product. And it opens up a world of possibilities, but it also comes with certain risks, right? Like, what if a system like that is weaponized, right? From an ethical perspective, and here I'm reminded of the inspiring conversation we had with our friend, Dr. Joe Yoon, just a couple of weeks ago. If there's no moment of reflection, you know, built in between impulse and action, between demand and supply, when that impulse is perhaps destructive, proximity can also increase the risk, but it does so because of its power, right? In a way, this dynamic is nothing new. Like with every revolutionary technology or process, there's always risk alongside tremendous opportunity.
Absolutely. But just to add to this, any technology is just a technology. It has both dark and light. Mm-hmm. It has challenges and opportunities. And it's up to us to figure out how we're going to apply it and to be more mindful of that. Because especially in a consumer society where everyone is trying to, quote unquote, serve you, they're simultaneously attempting to manipulate you. And so you've got to reflect on yourself. What do you really want? What are your values that you want to manifest? And not just think they are, but actually act accordingly. And so, as Sonia said, these technologies are so extraordinarily powerful. They'll do what we want, whether it's what we think we want or not.
This feels a little bit like the genie in the lamp, that if you rub it, you'll have a genie, make a wish, and your wishes will come true for good or for evil or somewhere in the middle. How will that play out?
Oh, boy. Well, that's a big question. But I'm actually a huge fan of dystopic literature. Mm-hmm. And not because I love dystopias, but I like it because it is fun and exciting, but also because it causes you to think about what we want, what we don't want. And probably my favorite story from this realm we share in the book, and I know it's a story that Sonia was aware of before because of her background in literature, but when George Orwell finished the manuscript for 1984, he sent a copy to his French teacher from years before, who happened to be, anybody? The author of Brave New World.
Oh.
And I'm feeling like an idiot because I love this guy and I can't remember his name right now.
Was it Huxley?
Yeah, Aldous Huxley. So you probably thought I was testing you. Really, I just couldn't remember his name. So
I was nervous to say his name I thought, what if I'm getting it wrong?
Me too.
Well, good. So we all express some humility. So in any case, he sent a copy of the manuscript to Aldous Huxley. And Huxley, of course, had published before that Brave New World, which I would say is one of my two favorite works of sci-fi.
Okay.
And Huxley wrote him a beautiful letter back. And you can find it online, a long, beautiful letter. And he basically said, look, this is a masterpiece. 1984 is definitely a masterpiece. But I have to say, I think that my dystopic vision of the future, Brave New World, is much more likely to happen. And the sort of shorthand about, if you haven't read Huxley's work or you read it a while ago, the shorthand is that everyone is corralled into seeking fleeting pleasure, into being focused on sensory factors with very little, almost no depth. And in fact, it's mandated that if you are feeling anxious or concerned or whatever, you actually take Soma, which is a pill, to eliminate those feelings and to just focus on pleasure. And I think the last 100 years have to some extent, at least in our society, borne out Aldous Huxley, that this is a clear and present challenge for us because we can be spoon-fed anything we want, anytime, anywhere. And I like watching Netflix limited series as much as anybody else, but this is where we have to take some personal responsibility and reflect on what we want to do and what the value is.
I love that you shared that story, Rob. It's really profound. It makes me think that we are perhaps focusing on the wrong goals sometimes. And proximity is making that more transparent. And as it becomes more of our daily reality, maybe we can think about how we can intentionally teach ourselves to be quick in other ways, maybe to be quick in kindness, to be quick in embracing empathy, you know, to be quick in challenging our biases. Of course, that's easier said than done. But as our world becomes more fast-paced, perhaps we can apply that immediacy, or at least the spirit of it, to our guiding principles, as opposed to seeking pleasure, as you're describing with Brave New World. How can we not hesitate or not hesitate as much when we're faced with a choice and where one of the options is perhaps to sacrifice something, to do something that in the immediate few moments, it's actually bad for us. You know, it doesn't feel good, but we know it's good.
Well, I just want to quickly say, I'm not proposing that AI is, or any of these technologies are intrinsically bad. I don't think that they are. Mm-hmm. And also keep in mind, as much as something like AI can challenge us, it can also help us and support us. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned biases, for instance, Sonia. And one of the things that I've done just for fun, and I found it really useful, was I took an issue that I was thinking about, and I asked ChatGPT and Pi, this is another generative AI platform, and I asked them to give me the pro scenario for this particular concept and the con scenario separately, each of them. And they quickly were able to present pro again for a particular issue and con for a particular issue. And that allowed me to review both of them. So we can use this, or it can use us, or probably more likely both.
Mm, yeah. And Sonia, I loved your language of not hesitating. That actually is very biblical. I don't know if you intended it to be that way or not, but Paul tells us, do not hesitate in showing love. So as our presiding bishop of the Episcopal Church, Bishop Michael Curry, says, everything comes back to love. And so if we do not hesitate to show love, and that's where we don't hesitate, how do all these other pieces fit in? And also, as the church, often when society is moving quickly, we're called to slow down. And how do we become intentional and thoughtful and flip that narrative of everything needs to be bigger, better, more now, and take the time that we need to think about what the implications are for each thing that's presented to us, but on the flip side, not take so long that everything is passé before we finish thinking about it.
Right. Well, I think, Joe, there was a key word when you say take the time. Mm. A key word there is take. And it suggests that we have a responsibility to do something, to decide or not to decide to do something. And it takes a lot of commitment to stand back and reflect. I think this is something that few of us are taught to do in the world. This is certainly a role for faith systems to help give people reasons and methodologies, reasons and ways to reflect more deeply on their lives, their values, where they want to go, where they want to be. Mm-hmm. Because the natural act of the world is moving so fast, it'll just pick you up and sweep you along. And it may or may not take you where you ultimately would like to be.
In terms of taking the time and taking action with what these new technologies can afford us, I am thinking of how AI, for example, can be of tremendous help for people with disabilities. I'm thinking of text-to-speech, you know, speech-to-text, all kinds of assistive technologies, you know, accessibility solutions. These are all just extraordinary resources to improve quality of life, help people with learning, empower those who are in the workforce. And again, the flip side is also true in the sense that generative AI can silo information, for example, or make it less accessible for some, or engage in manipulation. I think you were mentioning that earlier, Rob, but the potential is tremendous. And with some of these technologies, we see a lot of interdisciplinarity, a lot of different experts coming together, different social groups coming together. And I'm reminded, Rob, of something that I heard that at one of the Twin Global events that you organized a few years back, when someone from DARPA said that the world can change if you bring engineers and computer scientists together. I think it was Dr. Jeffrey Ling. I don't know if you want to share.
Yep.
Yeah. If you want to share with us a little bit about that, although it was a few years back, and I think kind of provided a glimpse into what we live today.
Yeah, what was possible? And I'll be happy to share Dr. Ling's story very briefly. But after that, I'd love to ask you and Joe what you're seeing with respect to AI in your faith-based role, in your role in the faith community, because I'm eager to learn what you're seeing. But with respect to Dr. Ling, I think the way to understand Jeffrey Ling is, first of all, to understand that he's out of this world. I mean, his mind works 1,000 miles a moment and in multiple dimensions. He's a retired Army doctor, retired as a colonel. He practices medicine at Johns Hopkins now, 6 tours of duty in the Middle East.
Wow.
And through those experiences, which he refers to in that speech you're talking about, Sonia, as wonderful experience, you know, wonderful opportunity. In other words, an opportunity to see problems and issues and challenges. And as he says, we want to make the world better. We all want to make the world better. So here are 2 examples. One, this was in 2004 and 5, and he saw people losing arms or legs. And he said, you know, he's a neurologist. So he said, you know, there must be a way to create a prosthetic you can control directly with your brain. Not like a normal prosthetic, but one that's hooked into the brain and you think, I want to grab that apple, and you grab the apple. Now, in 2005, he went back to DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, where we invest in crazy stuff like telekinesis. It hasn't worked, but it will later this century. And the internet. And of course, the internet worked out.
Yes, it did.
And they got a grant and they did it. By 2012, they had prosthetics that are controlled directly by the brain. And the military has installed these in some veterans, and they can actually, one veteran can self-transport himself to a wheelchair, even though he lost both of his arms. Now he has 2 prosthetic arms connected into his brain. And at the time he proposed this in 2005, most people said this is impossible, or it'll take decades to achieve. And they did it in 7 years. The second example, just briefly, is they kept running out of generic drugs in the war zone. And that's not hard to imagine why you'd run out of pharmaceuticals in a war zone. But what shocked me, I didn't know this, Dr. Ling told me that we have generic drug shortages at hospitals and clinics all over the United States every day. And so he said, everybody's working on these big global supply chains, trying to figure out, you know, how to make them a little bit better. He said, this is crazy. If I have the right equipment, I can make the drugs right here myself. After all, these drugs are made of carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen. So if I have the right equipment, and he said, it's kind of like the soda machine at the Fuddruckers, where you push like Diet Coke, Cherry Coke, Sprite, you get your own drink. He said, it's the same thing. In fact, the team at MIT he worked with to develop this technology, also their technology was used to develop Coca-Cola's Freestyle machine. So this technology is proven. It works. The FDA has confirmed that the drugs that come out of this, about the size of a refrigerator, the drugs that come out are the same as you would get at the pharmacy.
Wow.
And it's being used in small scale by the military right now. And there's the first commercial application in Tupelo, Mississippi, in a very underserved community. They had chronic shortages of certain injectable drugs. And since they switched this system on at the beginning of this year, they've had 0 stockouts, 0 shortages.
Wow.
So what Dr. Ling illustrates is something I call brutal simplicity. He takes, it's like Lysander cutting the Gordian knot. Everybody else wringing their hands, trying to figure out how to undo the knot. Lysander takes a sword out and chops it in half. Dr. Ling does that with his mind, with his perspective all the time. He looks at the underlying problem and says, how do we make this as ridiculously, stupidly simple as possible? And sometimes it works.
Wow.
Speak of proximity, right? Not having medication when you need it and then finding a solution to save lives that way.
As you might guess, he's one of the cases we use in the book.
That's incredible.
So, Joe, what are you seeing in your pastoral work with respect to AI? Are you using it? Are you seeing your parishioners engaging? What are you seeing?
There are certainly people engaging it all over the place. I am part of an AI and ministry. It's a Facebook group, but that's where people are gathering and sharing information. So I am actually Presbyterian, and we have something called a Book of Order. And it's this book of rules and regulations and how we govern ourselves and how we live our lives as Presbyterians. And so somebody fed that into ChatGPT and created an interactive Book of Order so that when you're searching for, okay, do I need session approval to do this action? You can type it into the browser and it'll let you know the answer. So that's one of the more interesting uses I've seen for generative AI, or at least helpful for my peers. How about you, Sonia?
Well, Joe, I am thinking of our soon-to-be-launched online community-building platform. Mm-hmm. And when we first joined and signed up as the cathedral, the page was immediately, within seconds, populated with elements of Gothic architecture and welcome messages and prompts for new community members.
Yes.
It was quite impressive, and it was all generative AI. Of course, we're going to work our way through all of that and personalize it.
Yes.
But I must say, it was impressive as a good start.
It was. And I've actually been back on since then. And I've been more interactive with the tool rather than just the self-populating. And it's been really helpful.
Well, you know, Joe and Sonia, that example of the Book of Order mm-hmm. is an example of proximity in the sense that, sure, you took the Book of Order and enabled the AI to answer a question. So anybody on their mobile device conceptually could go and say, what should we do about X? And then the AI can say, well, according to the Book of Order, such and such, and you don't have to look it up.
Right.
You don't have to try and call your colleague who might be asleep and you're waking them, you know, getting them out of bed. And you can just ask the AI. So that's proximity. But I even more exciting, I think, is why don't you take all the everything written by or about Martin Luther?
Mm.
And throw that into a generative AI system and ask Martin questions or maybe, you know, pick other faith leaders. That we call a proxy AI. And this is something that I started talking about in 2016 or 17. And I mm-hmm. thought, to be honest, I thought it would take a decade or more before we were even close to that. And last year it's still rudimentary, but it became possible.
I have seen people starting to do that now that you mentioned that. So as we're closing, I have a final question for both of you. Where do you find hope in all of this?
I'm thankful to God for the fact that I'm just naturally a hopeful person.
Hmm.
My observation about entrepreneurs in general, and I'm not only an entrepreneur, I do a number of different things, but you almost have to be optimistic at your heart to be an entrepreneur, because boy, you're going to suffer a lot of slings and arrows. Mm. And part of the reason I got into innovation early in my life, became entranced by it, was how incredibly exciting it was to see things that we could never have done before. So I'm very hopeful about where the places that we could go. And hopefully we can each have a small contribution to making those places good.
And it seems like AI actually gives us more opportunities to contribute.
Absolutely. And it can actually, we'll start to discover, it can see things and do things that we actually can't.
Right.
In terms of being able to simultaneously process through multiple paradigms, for instance. And mm-hmm. Sonia and I's common friend, Bob Hendrickson, is deep in AI, and he's been looking at multidimensional paradigmatic applications of AI, which are just at the earliest stages right now, and they don't mimic the way humans think. So I'm wow. so excited and scared to death. As Herdelin said, where lies fear lies also the saving power. So I'm going to bet on the saving power part.
I must say that I am hopeful too. I find it very exciting. I think that it is so transformative, so paradigm shifting, that it forces us to ask some fundamental questions. And whenever we are faced with that possibility to revisit some of these fundamental mm-hmm. questions as individuals, within our families, within our companies, our communities, as a society, it's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Thank you both. Any final thoughts before I wrap us up?
I just want to say thank you to both of you and to the Cathedral for addressing these highly relevant critical questions. No one has great answers, and we need all of us exploring them, certainly faith leaders, to bring these critical questions to our daily lives.
Thank you. Well, thank you, Rob and Sonia, for joining us today as we continue to wrestle with what AI means for us both today and in the future. And we hope you'll join us for our next episode when I sit down with two of my colleagues, the Reverend Canon Jan Naylor-Cope, Provost of the Cathedral, and the Reverend Leonard Hamblin, Canon Missioner of the Cathedral, to talk about how our multi-denominational clergy team helps to live out the Cathedral's call to be a house of prayer for all people. Thanks for listening to Crossroads, and until next time, peace be with you. If the digital offerings of the Cathedral enrich your daily life, please consider becoming a supporter today by making a gift at cathedral.org/inspire.